Why have just one conversation when you could have conversations around conversations about conversations?
Exactly. Which is why we created Tech Theater, Clubhouse Conversations. This is a podcast to continue that conversation. So every week on Clubhouse, 12:55 Eastern, if you want to come join us, we have these amazing discussions with brilliant people that sit at the intersection of technology and theater.
The conversations are an hour on Clubhouse, and it's never enough. We always walk away from these talks with so many thoughts, and so we decided to share those and reach even more people outside of our Clubhouse rooms. I'm Jess, CEO and co-founder of Broadway Unlocked. My background is in the theater. I love creating it, watching it, and of course, talking about it.
And I'm Joe, co-founder of Broadway Unlocked and a former startup guy, which makes me a nice counterpoint foil for Jess's wonderful creative mind.
And so with that, welcome to Tech Theater Tuesdays, where we start conversations around the conversations about the conversations we just had on the Clubhouse app. This week, sorry about those sirens if you can hear them, New York, y'all. This week was a really fun one because we experimented with a new format that was sort of inspired by the Clubhouse town halls that I go listen to on Sundays. They talk quite a bit about how Clubhouse is a nice format for the news, like rundown of the news. And something that one of the co-founders says quite often is like, if you have domain expertise and you're interesting to listen to, which like I feel like is definitely a thing our team nails, maybe, hopefully, I don't know, that, you know, it's a Clubhouse is a great place for you to like run down your sort of thoughts, opinions and viewpoints on like the news as it happens. So our producer Lucy put some work into trying to figure out how that format might work for us.
Yeah, it was a really fun and really engaging conversation. And like Jess said, Clubhouse is so good for the immediacy, and you know, it's not an on-demand podcast that we're listening to at some other time, i.e. what you're doing right now, but rather like it's all about what's happening in that moment, the thoughts that are really flowing and streaming, and it being sort of reactive to something that's happening in the news. It just makes so much intuitive sense, and I'm so glad that Jesse listened to those Sunday shows where the Clubhouse team kind of talks through their ideas and their product updates and got us down this track.
Yeah, not to put Lucy on the spot, but you want to jump in with us, Lucy, and talk a little bit about what you thought? We haven't actually gotten to talk about it much yet.
Yeah. Well, first off, I really enjoyed the new format. And I think exactly what Joe said is right, that Clubhouse has really built on this concept of immediacy. So the format we were doing previously, using Clubhouse to talk more generally about technology or issues for theater makers and other creatives, that worked, and I think our team was already so good at having those conversations. But there's something to be said for capitalizing on Clubhouse's strengths, and I think the news format makes it just that much easier to make direct connections with the people who join those rooms with us on Clubhouse.
Yeah,
that's interesting.
I really like that as well, Lucy, and I feel like when I imagine the product nature of Clubhouse and sort of what I as a consumer, like it's going to get me into a room, like why am I going to join any room? And if it is like a semi-generic like title or headline or something like that, it's like, oh, I don't actually know what's happening inside of that room, so I'm less likely to click into it if I don't already have an affinity for the club that's doing it or like some word that sticks out in the description. Whereas I like with this format, it feels like, oh, it's like so clear and apparent like what is happening inside of that room. It is talking about something that I either have heard about elsewhere, or I have an opinion on myself. It's very tangible in a way. And I was just thinking about that on the heels of our conversation in Clubhouse, that I feel like it makes it easier for people to opt into the conversation who may not otherwise, or who may not actually know what's going on in the room beforehand. And I know for myself, like stepping into nebulous digital spaces like that is always helped out by having at least a little bit of a sense of what I'm getting myself into.
I think that's something that I noticed with your first news topic that you gave us, Lucy, because like the bit was Lucy's going to pick the first piece of news we talk about each week and not tell anyone what it's going to be, which I actually think is like great. And what I noticed was you picked a topic. Well, this is how I saw it, right? You picked a topic that is very in our wheelhouse. We're talking about this Times article about AR/VR Midsummer Night's Dream at the Royal Shakespeare Company, right? This is like a theme exploration we talk about as a company a lot. But something about like previously on Clubhouse when we would say, hey, today we're talking about AR and VR, there was a sort of unconscious agenda everybody came in with on like how they wanted and where that to take that conversation and where it went. Whereas with this, the news item being the focus, I noticed that the conversation went places that I don't think it would have gone if we had come in with that as our topic for the room of the day. I don't know. And it's a subtle difference, I suppose. And I don't entirely understand what caused that, but I really liked that sort of outcome.
Oh, that's really interesting. Was there like a specific subject that came up during that conversation, Jess, for you that like pinpoints this idea of like, oh, I don't think this would have happened if it had been framed differently?
No, I mean, we're now a day later, so I don't remember specifically like the conversation points, but I would say that I think the conversation went on much longer than I expected it to without feeling forced. It kept turning these corners into different viewpoints and ideas and thoughts around the idea of what theater is in AR and VR and how those things interact. And I don't know, I saw Lucy, you pulled yourself off mute there for a second. Do you have opinions about that?
Well, I was just going to say it was interesting because I picked the topic. And so I had all these discussion questions prepared in case things sort of stalled. Ah. And then I had all these different ideas about directions we could go. And we didn't go there at all. It was perfect. That's exactly what I hoped would happen.
Yeah. And I think that, I think you saw that in our, so we basically did a shakeup 30 minutes into the conversation, and the topic, the news piece, the news item, because that's the frame is a news item, right, was the Hollywood Reporter article about Scott Rudin, a producer who is sort of known in our industry to be incredibly abusive and has finally sort of been outed publicly. Hey everyone, it's Jess with a quick note. A warning to our listeners, the remainder of this podcast episode contains discussions of abuse and mentions of sexual violence. Please listen at your own discretion. And if you or someone you know is a survivor of violence, you can visit RAINN.org. That's RAINN.org. Or if you're in the tri-state area, CVTCNYC.org to access free treatment and assistance. What I was thinking about this too, like, well, let me frame this up. This is all my brain thinking about like how you frame something like this and how you create a piece of content or a recurring piece of content and how you iterate on it, right? That's like what I'm always thinking about. And when we got to talking about Scott Rudin, what I really also liked about this sort of surprise news, blind news item format for this show is that if that room had said the news in tech and theater, colon, Scott Rudin, right? Like if we had said that's the news piece we're talking about, that sort of creates a space for a very particular thing that attracts like people for that thing. Whereas with the blind items, like no one knew we were going to talk about Scott Rudin and it happened organically. And I think that opened the space for some like incredibly honest, vulnerable conversation around that news item and a group of people who would have been there even if we hadn't talked about Scott Rudin, I guess is my point, right? Like, there's something a little that could have been clickbaity about like us being like, we're going to put Scott Rudin on the title of this room because it's going to get a ton of people in here because people are fucking worked up about this week, as well they should be. But using it as a like keeping it blind item and letting it just happen, I don't know. It just, I don't know, creates the culture of conversation that we want to attract, I think, is what I saw.
That makes a lot of sense to me that. The type of person, I'm now just repeating what you said, the type of person that's going to show up to, you know, rant about or share their thoughts on Scott Rudin may also be the type of person that's like, oh, well, like, I now feel a little less comfortable sharing my own thoughts because, like, I don't know who this person is and, like, I don't, like, they're throwing bombs and, like, I want to have, you know, a more level-headed conversation about the, you know, the reality of what it is to be Playbill and how Playbill should talk about and cover this. And it's like, well, I now I'm just going to get into a fight with this person who's throwing bombs. Like, I'm just going to like sit on the back burner and not share. And so, yeah, mm-hmm. It felt like a safe place to be able to share because it wasn't framed around, let's get everyone fired up about Scott Rudin.
Right. And that conversation was incredible. I mean, been at this for a long time. I love, and we frequently have very complex conversations around topics in this company. But this was sort of like even went far beyond what I could have expected. It was so complicated, that conversation about Scott Rudin. And I think, Lucy, because you're so new, I would be, if you are willing to share a little bit about your impressions of that part of the conversation, I'd be really interested to hear about it.
I mean, it is interesting because I haven't had a lot of experience deeply in the entertainment industry, but even my limited knowledge, he was somebody that I knew about. But I think it was very interesting to hear about people who have worked either closely with, you know, his companies or his productions, or have worked, you know, for Playbill or other publications, to hear just the scale of the impact this one person could have on such a massive industry was like the most shocking thing to me, because it's hard to gauge that when you are not ingrained in this industry or the work that it does. It's hard to like grasp that scale.
And the fact that it didn't stop that article, like it's still, we had a friend from a big, huge media platform that was like, I can't publish my op-ed because the power he wields will negatively affect my platform. I don't know. That was pretty astounding.
Yeah, it was wild to hear, because similar to Lucy, I'm like a degree removed from like the industry, and I've never worked in or adjacent to or on the production that he was associated with. Mm-hmm. But to hear it through the lens of, yeah, people that we know and we trust and, you know, we have an emotional and intellectual connection with, and like to be able to like see and hear them feeling kind of shaken up and kind of scared and kind of unsure of how to deal with it. Like it was really palpable and really visceral in a way that, you know, just reading that New York Times article could never be for me. So I like appreciate those people so much for being vulnerable in that moment and sharing their like specific and emotional stories about their experience inside of that system.
Yeah, that's something I think I took away. I was actually checking on our comms director last night, because I did not, we've been friends for a long time and worked together for a long time, and I had no idea that she had such a direct connection with Scott Rudin and had been directly impacted to the point that she was really nervous to even bring it up yesterday. And I was just checking in with her, because I was thinking, like, in some ways, I'm not so dissimilar from you all, because I've sort of spent my entire career working outside that system purposefully. I kind of, like, know Scott Rudin sucks, but, like, not in the way, like you both were saying, not in a real way. And I feel like yesterday hearing from all those people, like you just said, Joe, that is a feeling and an understanding you can't get from an article, which also made me, just to wrap it back around, really appreciative for this format. I really like it.
Yeah, totally agree. It has that personality to it and personal touch to it. And going back to that format, allowing for the space for that. I did have like a thought throughout that, because one of the themes inside of as people were sharing the stories were like, you know, I learned so much working on one of these shows. You know, I felt like I was pushed to my limits, and like there was both like the good lens of that, and like I hesitate to even say the word good, but like it felt like as people were talking about it, they did say like, you know, he has won awards and he has done these amazing things, and how do like we grapple with something like that, because are our measures of success wrong if like this person can be lauded and can be sort of built up into the position where now they're kind of like they're too powerful and they're too interconnected to ever be wrong, too big to fail sort of idea.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh, are our measures of success like, are our measures of success broken if that's what can happen? It's almost like, you know, should there be billionaires? It's almost like that conversation, right? Like, is the system structured in such a way that like, oh, you know, everyone winning a bunch of Tonys, like at the expense of a whole bunch of human beings, like emotional, like health and well-being, like, is it worth it? And like, I mean, my thought is no from the outside. But it was just like something that kept coming back around to me, because even the people who were sharing how they like felt the abuse and were like scared inside of those environments were like, oh, but it's still like, I still like did really good work, and I still like was proud of the fact that this won awards. And it's like, oh, how can those two things exist at the same time? And like, how can the system, you know, continue to uphold that? Or how can we change the system to not allow for that environment to exist just because it wins Tony's, just because it like makes money, just because it is successful?
Well, I don't know the answer to your question, but in the spirit of complicated conversations, I might offer back that like the other side of it, which is a thing that's been on my mind recently, which is it's very, very hard to get people to work to your standard and do the things that you ask them to do. And so not that I'm not justifying it at all. In the spirit, again, of sort of that really complicated nature of the conversation we had yesterday, like that's the thing that comes up for me is like, how do you split the middle? Because I imagine something in the answer to your question is like some perfect world that doesn't exist, where people like just execute Scott Rudin to Scott Rudin's level vision, like whatever, magically, and don't think they know better or whatever, right? And I don't, like, I do not believe anything justifies that behavior, but I just, in that sort of asking for that question, I wonder if it's not, there's a little bit of it that's just a world that doesn't exist. Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, I do think it definitely, I can't see the path to it right now. Maybe it just doesn't exist at all, like you said.
But back to, like, the conversation, just to, like, wrap that piece of it up that we had yesterday, the thing that can happen that's not a perfect world is repercussions for behavior, right? That is categorically not okay. And it's the fact that he's still, it just doesn't seem to matter that this happened, like, you know. And this is probably just the flip-flop of playing both sides of the deck here on your question, like, the fact that he can still stop someone from having a public opinion about his behavior in this moment is completely unacceptable and ridiculous.
Yeah. Not to put you in the prediction business, but, like, do you think the conversation will continue down a path towards, you know, accountability, or is it going to, you know, flare up in the way that it has, give more voice to certain people, but actually nothing ends up changing?
I might be, like, a real pessimist about this, but I think the only way that happens is if more people come forward with, like, stuff that's bad enough that there's, like, legal repercussions for it. Mm-hmm. I just don't know. Now, having heard that conversation we had in Clubhouse yesterday from all those voices, I just don't believe that there's any other way but, like, repercussions that cannot be avoided, you know, which to me screams, like, someone's got to be brave enough to come forward with something really bad that was illegal, you know?
Yeah. I guess that's back to the question about, like, the system itself. Like, what things about the system right now and will actually, like, have an impact on this person in these situations? And, like, the fact that the structure of it is such that right now, like, yeah, the line between, like, general human decency and then, like, what's illegal, there's, like, a huge chasm between the two. And
yeah.
It's like, oh, yeah, there's a lot of gray space that someone can mess around in. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not great. And I actually even thought about, like, I was thinking about this last week when we were chatting with someone else. There's so much of this in our industry that we all know about. Like, I don't know about it enough to be able to, like, force legal action on it, but we know about it, you know what I mean? And I wonder frequently how people can continue to just, like, not report this stuff, you know? And I know that that's a thing I think about a lot because I advocate for survivors of crime. But, like, it's just, I don't know. It's, there's a lot of this.
Yeah. And I wonder if there's, like, a Sleeping Giants style movement brewing inside of the arts. Like,
Sleeping I don't Giants. Know what that references.
Sleeping Giants is an organization that it basically calls out the advertisers who are advertising on, like, hateful, hurtful content. And so if like, you know, Nabisco is advertising on Fox News or something like that, like, they'll basically, like, capture all those little moments. They're like, Nabisco, what are you doing? Like, you are literally supporting, like, this hate speech and this and that.
Oh, interesting.
And so their entire organization is around, like, capturing and calling out brands. So it's like, we're going to take this directly to the source of the money and use our sort of, like, public platform, because they've built a public platform around this concept.
Hmm.
And they use it to put and, like, yeah, enforce pressure on these companies who could otherwise pretty easily, like, just turn a blind eye, but, you know, before the internet and before, like, the connectivity of social media allowed us all to sort of get mad about the same thing at the same time.
Yeah.
I think that the difference in this example is that, like, the source of the money is also the problem.
Right.
It'd basically be like if Sleeping Giants was going to Nabisco and be like, Nabisco, you should cancel yourself. And they'd be like, no.
Right. Right. And then it's, like, exacerbated by the fact that there's not a lot of money in our industry to begin with. Right. So it's very valuable, like, very, very valuable, or perceived to be very, very valuable. Let's put it that way. That's really interesting. Yeah. I mean, I grapple with that a lot, so much so that even, like, with our concert, the Give Back concert, as we came out of our 2019 concert, which is the last one we did, and if you don't know, it's a benefit concert that's live streamed and interactive for survivors of violence, we're putting a must report like clause into our contracts with our writers and our performers and everyone who's involved. Because I've had people come to me and report that someone involved with our concert has behaved inappropriately in the past with them, to differing degrees. But like, you know, at the end of the day, at least, like, if someone doesn't want me to report that kind of stuff, this is the other, this is a totally different conversation, but I can't. Like, that's the deal, is if they ask me not to do anything about it, I can't. And like, I, to answer my own question, like, cannot live with that. It like tears me up. You know what I mean? Like, I just like, I'm just the person who's going to say something about it. And I just can't, because it's really about the person who survived that. Right. So yeah, we're like those. I wonder what other mechanisms like that could happen too. Like, that's easy enough for us, just like a school to put a must report clause in the, you know, your talent contract.
Yeah. That's interesting. Like, it takes the power and it takes like the potential fear of reporting out of that person's hands in a way, where it's like, hey, we as the institution, the organization, are going to stand behind this, and like, it isn't on you, the individual, to make that decision for yourself, and then therefore have to like shoulder the entire burden of what comes from it. Is that like the idea behind it?
I think yes. However, I think it's actually more on the side of like an me, anybody who's reported to is protect. Like, the reason we don't like say something often, right? Like, I it just sort of makes it clear that like, if you come tell the producer of this concert, you report someone for behavior, we can't. It's not personal. We have to report it up. And that helps like me, where I am currently living with knowing a couple of people who have been accused of sexual misconduct, and I cannot tell anyone, and I can't do anything about it. And like, that negatively impacts me, you know, as a human, mm-hmm. like in my wellness, because it like is terribly upsetting and disappointing and all that stuff. So anyway, I just wonder, like, reporting structures and mechanisms are a thing I think about frequently, and might be an interesting like approach also in the wake of this kind of stuff. You know, where it just makes it less personal and takes the, like, I don't know.
It does. It feels too like something that you can like have a bit of a movement around, like get everyone on the same page about mm-hmm. like, this is something that we are going to stand for and put into our, you know, our contracts. And we as a theater or this type of organization or that type of organization are going to stand behind this and make it like, make it a publicly a conscious thing, such that people know what they're opting into, and then it gets adopted more widely. It feels like something tangible that people can actually do, versus screaming into a void or just, you know, being frustrated about the power dynamics that exist and how hard it is to fight against them right now.
That's so true. Oh man.
Well, I don't have a good transition, so feel free to cut this part, but we would love to hear what all of you out there think, and to keep these conversations about conversations going. And you know, you can be part of that chain by tweeting at us at BWayUnlocked using the hashtag TechTheaterCH, and joining us next time for a conversation on Clubhouse.
Yeah, we'll be there, the Broadway Unlocked Club, Tuesday at 12:55 Eastern for land acknowledgments, starting that conversation at 1 p.m. in the new format, which is talking about the news of the week in technology and theater with a group of diverse and like crazy, amazing, funny, sort of like across a lot of different industries, people on stage chatting through this news. So be sure to come join us, raise your hand, jump in, and share your thoughts.
Oh, and if you'd like to moderate a show with us, you can pitch your idea at broadwayunlocked.com/ch, and you get to talk to the very nice Robo Jess.
Yeah, we're talking, Lucy and Joe and I are talking about, you know, maybe shaking it up every once in a while. We'll try to do the news breakdown most weeks, but if we've got something super cool, we can break the format. So to that point, every single topic we've talked about has been inspired by the people on our stage. So please do tweet us at hashtag TechTheaterCH, slide into our DM, say hi, join the conversation. And until then, we will see you next week.
Bye, everyone.